Traditional revenue sources for public media and media at large are declining this year, and we at Marketplace are not immune to those trends. We're currently tracking behind target for this budget year. We're tightening up our expenses, yes, but the need for trusted, grounded, fact-based reporting is as pressing as ever, and we simply cannot cut back on our mission. So we're turning to the listeners like you. Please step up now and invest in Marketplace. If you haven't given yet, now's the time. Go to marketplace.org/donate. On the program today, the past 5 days in this economy, of course, various and sundry other slices of this economy we all call home to, from American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Friday today. This one is the 10th of November. Good as always to have you along, everybody. Our challenge, should we choose to accept it, and of course we do, is to talk about this economy for the next 6 or 7 minutes, where it stands and where it's going, all without using the words Federal Reserve or Jay Powell. Alongside me to meet this moment, and unbeknownst to them that those are the conditions of this conversation, are Lynette Lopez from Business Insider, also Sadeep Reddy from Politico. Hey, you two.
Hey, Kai.
Hi, Kai. I did not agree to those restrictions, but go ahead.
This is a very Andy Cohen moment. I feel like I'm on Bravo right now.
I try to keep it interesting, as Sadeep and I were chatting about before we actually turned the microphones on. You know, we've been doing this a long time, he and I, and you and I, Lynette, so we got to shake it up. Okay, so I'm a little bit kidding, but mostly I only want to talk about the Fed for a second because there's a bunch of other stuff to talk about. Sudeep, you get the first crack at this one, and then Lynette, I want your thoughts as well. Nobody has yet explained to me why the markets have not been believing what the Fed has been saying, right? Powell and the gang have been saying we're going to keep rates high for as long as we have to. And every single time they say it, the market goes, yeah, no, Jay, we don't believe you. He said it last week in his press conference, and the markets promptly went, yeah, that's fine. We're going to rally for a while. He finally had to come out yesterday and give another speech and said, no, I'm serious. And my question, Sudeep, is why haven't the markets believed?
Because in the past, the central bank has generally tried to deliver messages like this and then turns on a dime. And then when they see the risk of an economic downturn, they quickly turn around and they want to. Markets are short-term focused. That's their nature. Their traders are trying to make money each day. And the chair of the central bank, still haven't used his name, the chair of the central bank is focused on he's focused on medium and longer term goals. And that's the challenge. That's the persistent mismatch. And the key line this week from the Fed chair was inflation has given us a few head fakes.
Right.
And he does not want to give in to that risk of, oh, we've seen a little bit of improvement. This is the mistake that's been made by his predecessors. Seeing some improvement, take your eye off the ball, let markets go run wild, and then you have a whole other problem that you have to deal with later. And he's had this idea. He was a little late in getting to the problem of inflation. You only want to deal with it once, and this is his one time.
Lynette, same basic question with this addendum. Is jawboning, is talking to the markets right now all the central bank has left?
No, I mean, they can actually raise rates again.
Yeah, but if they do that in the face of the market not believing they're ever going to do that, right?
I think that the reason why this is happening is because Wall Street gets used to certain patterns of making money in certain ways the economy works. Huh. And the economy is very strong, still is.
Yep.
It hasn't broken. So the mechanisms for making money, like buy tech stocks, do this, do that, they're not totally broken. Hmm. And so the Wall Street has gotten, the last 10, 15 years has gotten used to doing things a certain way. And it's going to keep doing those things until they don't work anymore. That is what I think the stock market is all about.
All right.
That and just a general disrespect of central banks.
Yeah, that is sort of enduring. Okay. Sudeep, speaking of things not working, the Congress of the United States, the Republican conference in the House specifically, Speaker Johnson now has, I've lost track, I think it's 7 days to save us from a shutdown. What reason do we have to believe that anything will pass?
because things have passed before, and because shutdowns are not good for the party that causes the shutdown. Everybody recognizes that. They still want to touch the stove despite doing that, but they're not good for the party that leads to it. It just leads to some blame. The new speaker is navigating a lot of very difficult circumstances that existed before him, for several speakers before him on the Republican side, and he's trying to get through it. It seems likely that they will find some way to kick the can for a little while, but this is all wrapped up in fundamental political cross currents that are going to have to get resolved a year from now, this week in the election. And so that's really where this gets like fully dealt with. But there are underlying issues that just the extremism in certain wings of his party, that's not going to be something he can deal with, except maybe kicking the can and finding some way to at least look like he's addressing the underlying issues.
Yeah, I guess I would submit that the underlying tensions in this economy and this country aren't going to be solved a year from now, you know, given even if there are any elections. But Lynette, same basic question to you. Do you believe that Congress is going to pass anything? I mean, Sudeep's an old Washington hand, and he always says they're going to pass it because they have to, and I guess they always do. But from where you sit, what do you see?
I am not an old Washington hand, and neither is this speaker.
Yeah.
And that is what kind of freaks me out about this. You know, this guy doesn't have a lot of experience. He doesn't have a lot of enemies, but he doesn't have a lot of friends either. So I don't know. I just don't know. We haven't had a speaker this inexperienced and this just kind of, I mean, everything he does seems very ham-fisted and political, and it doesn't seem very productive.
Sorry, go ahead. Yeah. I'm sorry.
So that's the new thing, is this new guy, and this new guy has not proven that he can really do anything ever at all.
So Sudeep, just off of that, this does seem like a huge injection of uncertainty at a time when really we don't need uncertainty, right?
That is true. There are a lot of forces causing uncertainty. Right. There are a lot of things on the speaker's plate that are causing uncertainty, including two wars overseas that actually can create a lot of problems for inflation and everything else. And so there are a bunch of things on his plate right now. There are long deferred issues. I think the older school Republicans have some cause for saying, "I told you so," when inflation rates are very high and the cost of servicing the debt is eating up even more of the federal budget. And this is obviously not sustainable. There are people on the Democratic side who have tried to deal with this as well. But this is not going to be the forum to deal with long-standing right. underlying issues with taxing the rich and dealing with entitlement. So none of this is going to get resolved right now in the big picture sense. But they are the issues that do need to get discussed. Right before we came on live, Moody's, one of the credit rating firms, lowered its outlook a little bit on U.S. Debt. They didn't do a full AAA downgrade, but it was still another warning sign about the dysfunction that exists in running the federal budget, and that's going to continue for a while until you get to the real heart of the issues.
Sudeep Reddy at Politico, Lynette Lopez at Business Insider. Thanks, you two.
Thanks, Guy.
On this Friday, traders went looking for reasons to buy, and, you know, they found them. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Two things on the way to setting up this next story. Number one, people, you have got to make up your minds how you feel about this economy. And number two, why so glum, chum? The economy's growing at 4.9% as of last quarter. Unemployment's down to historic lows. And yet you, me, and all the rest of us are still pretty grumpy. That's the latest reading from the University of Michigan, which said this morning consumer sentiment has fallen for the fourth straight month to a new six-month low. The calendar matters here, too. Hello, holiday shopping season. But how consumers are feeling and how they spend haven't always lined up. in this weird post-pandemic economy. Marketplace's Megan McCarty-Carino takes that one.
For more than half a century, the University of Michigan's Consumer Survey has been a reliable bellwether for the economy. But it's a lot harder to read these days, says Ted Rossman, a senior analyst at Bankrate.
It's really interesting to see the disconnect that's going on because consumer sentiment has been depressed for years now. It's really never demonstrably recovered from the pandemic.
Yet, through lockdowns and supply chain holdups, inflation and interest rate hikes, consumer spending has remained resilient.
It just doesn't feel good because everything costs more.
Consumer sentiment and inflation have improved since last year, but the high prices have been with us longer, says Gregory Dacko, chief economist at EY.
Those levels are not coming back down to where they were before the pandemic. We're seeing people showing and displaying cost fatigue.
Plus, Dacko says the job market is finally slowing down, and most households have run through their pandemic savings.
Consumers are going to be spending, but they're going to apply more scrutiny as to what they buy and how much they actually pay for their purchases.
Retailers are braced for that, but it's tough to predict what customers will do, says Brian Eshelman, a consultant with Alex Partners.
I think, unfortunately, for most retailers, the strategy at this point is hope.
Plus, bigger promotions. You might have noticed Black Friday started around Halloween this year. But Eshelman says consumers may not take the bait, and he includes himself.
As my wife and I think about gifts for our children, we're wondering, do they need anything else? Then, yeah, we could go and buy the obligatory Christmas gifts, but life is short, and let's focus on doing things together rather than buying things for each other.
Eshelman Kids, hope family time is on your Christmas list. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino for Marketplace.
We've talked about bond yields more than a couple of times the past couple of months, way more than a couple of times, to be honest. Long-term yields on 10 and 30-year bonds have been rising over the past year, and that matters because those yields play directly into the overall cost of borrowing in this economy. Jay Powell, there's his name, was asked about it at a conference yesterday, and he said, and this is a quote, "We really don't know why bond yields have been going up." And we think that's a little surprising considering, you know, he is the chairman of the Federal Reserve, but also, does he not listen to this program? Marketplace's Justin Ho explains why all of this is so hard to figure out.
It's not like Jay Powell's being naive here.
I think he's being honest. You know, honesty is the best policy. At least that's what my mom told me.
That's Frederick Mishkin, an economics professor at Columbia and a former member of the Fed's Board of Governors. Mishkin says he understands where Powell is coming from because there are a lot of reasons why bond yields might rise.
And I think all of them are factors right now. And then the question is, which are the most important?
One big reason that yields might be rising is that bond traders are betting the Fed is going to keep interest rates high for a while to combat inflation. But Winnie Caesar, global head of strategy at Credit Sites, says we don't know how long the Fed's going to keep at it.
We're not sure if there are structural changes in the U.S. economy and the global economy that are going to keep inflation elevated.
Another reason yields might be rising? Investors think the U.S. government might flood the market with new bonds to fund the deficit. That could push investors to sell bonds, and when bond prices fall, yields go up. But Caesar says investors still have reasons to buy bonds, too.
U.S. treasuries are generally viewed as the safest and highest quality, and with them now yielding much, much higher than they had for most of the post-Great Financial Crisis era, that looks much more attractive.
If all this sounds confusing, it is. Robert Jarrow, a finance professor at Cornell University, says Jay Powell would like to figure this out because the Fed wants to be in control.
If you know what's pushing it up, you know what actions you can take, possibly, to reverse or change those effects.
For instance, if it turns out that bond yields are rising because investors expect rates to rise more in the future, Jarrow says the Fed can step in.
If they are completely transparent and convey what they're going to do to the public, that manages expectations about the future.
Powell says the Fed is monitoring rising bond yields, but the central bank hasn't decided what to do about them yet. I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
Coming up.
All right, that chapter's done. Let's look to the future.
Onward and upward. First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrials gained 391 points, about 1.1%, landed at 34,283 today. The NASDAQ added 276 points, 2% there. That gets you the really happy music, 13,798. The S&P 500 picked up 67, almost 1.6%, 44.15. For the 5 days gone by, the Dow grew 0.7%, the NASDAQ improved 2.4%, S&P 500 advanced about 1.3%. Casino operator Wynn Resorts lost 5.7% today, despite posting better than expected earnings late yesterday. MGM Resorts increased 1.4%, Caesars Entertainment grew 2.8% today. All three companies have now struck deals with their workers that should prevent the threatened strike. Groupon tumbled nearly 35% after posting third quarter revenue yesterday that missed expectations. In other news, Groupon is still a thing. Bond prices rose, yield on the 10-year T-note, 4.63%. You're listening to Marketplace.
My name is Lee Hawkins. I've been a journalist for over 25 years. On my new podcast, What Happened in Alabama, I get answers to some of the hardest questions about how things came to be for many Black Americans and the truth that must come before any reconciliation can happen. I investigate my family history, my upbringing in Minnesota, and my father's painful nightmares about growing up in Alabama. What Happened in Alabama is a new series confronting the cycles of trauma for myself, my family, and for many Black Americans. Listen now.
Traditional revenue sources for public media and media at large are declining this year, and we at Marketplace are not immune to those trends. We're currently tracking behind target for this budget year. We're tightening up our expenses, yes, but the need for trusted, grounded, fact-based reporting is as pressing as ever, and we simply cannot cut back on our mission. So we're turning to the listeners like you. Please step up now and invest in Marketplace. If you haven't given yet, now's the time. Go to marketplace.org/donate. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Ryssdal. Oftentimes, the shorthand that Congress uses for a particular piece of legislation isn't the sum and total of what that particular piece of legislation is actually about. For instance, the current version of what's commonly called the Farm Bill is more properly known as the Agricultural Improvement Act of 2018, everything from ag subsidies to energy programs and nutrition assistance and food aid. It comes up for renewal every 5 years, so it's getting to be that time. But as you've heard, Congress in passing spending bills, it's kind of challenging right now. Marketplace's Savannah Maher talked to some people about what a delayed farm bill might mean out there on the ground.
The farm bill ties the economic interests of the ag sector to the needs of low-income Americans and rural districts' priorities to cities.
So lots of areas of possible disagreement.
Especially right now, says Patrick Westhoff at the University of Missouri, when lawmakers are tied up with other seemingly intractable negotiations. And if they don't pass a farm bill extension or replacement before the new year,
there would indeed be major consequences, not just for farmers, but for everyone.
Aaron Shire with the National Farmers Union says some commodity programs would revert to Depression-era rules, including one that would have the USDA buying up dairy products way above market value.
And that would cause real problems in the marketplace for food prices.
The prospect of, say, $10 gallons of milk should nudge Congress to at least extend the current farm bill. But the status quo still isn't ideal for farmers, says Amy Hagerman at Oklahoma State University.
Well, the world looked very different in 2018 when that farm bill was developed.
She says it costs a lot more to grow food, for one thing. And the reference prices that trigger programs like crop insurance when farmers have a bad year need adjusting.
So for a lot of producers, they would like to see the changes to better address our current environment.
Unless we get a new bill before the 2024 presidential race slows down Congress's work, we're probably looking at a year-long extension. Michael Happ is with the Institute for Agriculture and Trade Policy.
I think the biggest impact is really uncertainty among farmers,
who are dealing with plenty of risk to begin with. I'm Savannah Marr for Marketplace.
Most students who start at community colleges don't plan to end their education there. Nearly 80% of them say they intend to transfer to a four-year school and get a bachelor's degree. But less than 20% manage to actually do that within 6 years. This week, the Department of Education released for the first time national data on how colleges are serving or not serving those transfer students. Marketplace's Stephanie Hughes looks at where the transfer system breaks down.
In 2021, Marissa Nicholson transferred from a community college in Wisconsin to a four-year public university in Texas. And she was pumped.
Just packed everything in my car and just drove down here.
Nicholson thought it would only be 2 more years of school before she got her bachelor's degree. But then she found out the majority of the courses she'd taken, including math and history, wouldn't transfer over.
The basic classes that I took were useless.
This experience is pretty common. The federal government estimates transfer students lose more than 40% of their credits on average when they move between schools. It's almost like students are going from one country, the community college, to another, the four-year institution. And the new one says, your money's no good here. We don't take those credits.
Sometimes you have a cultural reluctance to accept community college courses as being, you know, identical to what was taught at the university.
James Quall is undersecretary for the Department of Education. He says the data released this week shows that institutions need to talk to each other to say, yeah, this is what a freshman level calculus class looks like, and we'll give credit to the student. Another issue, says John Fink with the Community College Research Center at Teachers College at Columbia, is that students and their advisors don't always know where they'll end up, which can make it hard to plan.
I think our conventional approach with transfer students, why we're getting these low outcomes, is we'll just start taking courses at a community college and figure it out later.
All this costs students money and time. Again, Education Undersecretary James Quall.
The longer it takes for students to graduate, the greater chances that life gets in their way, something goes wrong.
And Quall points out the U.S. badly needs more of these students to complete their degrees so they can become the nurses and engineers and chemists we're going to need more of in the future. I'm Stephanie Hughes from Marketplace.
While not quite yet actually back up and running, Hollywood is at least headed that way with the end of the actors' strike. And that's a big deal not just for the people already working in the industry. It's a big deal for the people who want into that industry as well. 6 months ago, we heard from a couple of three new college graduates starting out in the labor force, and we're following up with them this week. Troy Swinar graduated from Ohio State and had planned to make the move out to Los Angeles.
So I did not end up moving to L.A. Shocking, honestly, nobody. If you've paid attention to the entertainment industry, things got worse before they got better. But it did take a while to come over that, like, man, it feels like I'm not going anywhere. Like, I want to do something. I want to feel like I'm in motion, but just not feeling that. I do have a job right now. I have a seasonal position at a Lego store 15 minutes from home. It's genuinely, it's a fun thing to do. You're surrounded by toys. You're surrounded by, little kids who think the world of these things. Sometimes you get paid to build them when they come in. It's a very nice seasonal position to have, I'll say. Honestly, the big surprise, and sort of comforting, too, in a backward sense, is everyone seems to be in the same boat. We're all in the same position of, still being at home, being like, yeah, well, I found a job at Target. It's like, great, that's something. Take it. Awesome. But it's also, I don't think, what we were expecting for each other. I think is, you know, we're, especially our ages, everyone's easy to like get down on yourselves. It's like, man, I'll struggle, but like, they'll be fine. And so it's a weird reality check to be like pointing at each other and being like, oh, you too, huh? Okay. It makes me feel better, but like also like, dang, like we're all kind of, you know, treading water together here. So the current state of my plans to move to LA is building up that courage to just make the move, to not, you know, not have anything lined up, but just feel like it's easier to find something once you're there. It's, you know, I have the seasonal position that ends mid-January. It makes it easy to be like, all right, that chapter's done. Let's look to the future. I've been talking with some friends about, you know, potential roommates, looking at it, leases in the new year, you know, it's always easier to start then. So I would say the hope within the next 3 months, I make something happen here. I make a move. If not then, 6 months. If not then, we'll make this up as we go.
Troy Swinar there, still in Avon, Ohio, hoping, though, making it up as he goes along to make the move out here. Final note on the way out today, Honda is reading the handwriting on the organized labor wall. The Wall Street Journal had this one, that the car maker whose factories here are not unionized is giving many of its U.S. workers 11% pay bumps starting in January and is cutting in half from 6 years to three the time it takes those workers to get to the top of the pay scale. Toyota did basically the same thing a month or so ago after the UAW started winning concessions from Detroit's big three. All right, here's your moment of economic context. I just want to follow up on that thing Sudeep said at the top of the program. The Moody's change in outlook for U.S. debt. We're still AAA, but here's the operative phrase. I'm literally just going to read it from my phone. Continued political polarization within the U.S. Congress raises the risk that successive governments will not be able to reach consensus on a fiscal plan to slow the decline in debt affordability. That's interest rates. That's debt and deficit. There's a lot going on there. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace's executive producer is Nancy Fargali. Donna Tam is the executive editor. Neil Scarbrough is the vice president and general manager. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Have a great weekend, everybody. We are back on Monday. This is APM.
My name is Lee Hawkins. I've been a journalist for over 25 years. On my new podcast, What Happened in Alabama, I get answers to some of the hardest questions about how things came to be for many Black Americans and the truth that must come before any reconciliation can happen. I investigate my family history, my upbringing in Minnesota, and my father's painful nightmares about growing up in Alabama. What Happened in Alabama is a new series confronting the cycles of trauma for myself, my family, and for many Black Americans. Listen now.